Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Jeff Byers. We're here to talk some Penn State, Illinois football. Penn State on the road for the first time Saturday night. Come away with a 30-13 win. And Jeff, just before we started on the air, you and I were talking about how last week somebody, we're not naming names though, somebody last week was talking about how this team just does not drop passes. I'm not sure who that was. Do you recall?
I heard him on a local radio station up here, and I just was shaking my head all during the game Saturday thinking about what I had, I mean, what this person that I had heard on the radio had said, and it's like, what was he thinking?
You know what, Jeff? It was, after two games, there were so many things, like, I can't recall in the first two games any real bad drops. I can't recall any real misfire passes from Drew Aller. I can't recall that, the cliche, somebody's not communicating here. Somebody either, you know, the quarterback expected the receiver to go this way and he went that way. They're not communicating. I don't recall any of that in the first two games, but boy, did we see plenty of that on Saturday.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of different things that came into play Saturday, and it'll be interesting to see over the next few weeks now how some of this stuff progresses. You know, one is, and I was probably underrating and underappreciating the significance of it, but it is the first time that this year's team was on the road. I do think this was a really motivated Illinois team. I think they were a little embarrassed with what they put on film in the first half against Kansas and even in the win over Toledo the previous week. And I think they probably, hit all the right buttons in terms of the coaching staff, getting those guys motivated and ready to go for the Big Ten matchup with Penn State. Another, I think, significant component that I didn't think was that big of a deal going into the game just because of the depth Penn State has. But when we got word that Trey Wallace was questionable and then when he didn't play, I do think twofold. One is he was the most dependable receiver through those first two games and was the guy that they went to the most often just to get yards. And I think his absence meant that obviously some other guys needed to step up, most notably Malik McClain. And, you know, McClain had a tough day. I no question his toughest day to date in a Penn State uniform. And again, I think there it could be that it was just an off day, but it could be that he felt like he now needed to step into a greater role. And, you know, even though I don't know that the number of plays he was on the field for was all that different, maybe it felt different to him with Wallace being out of there in terms of what he thought he needed to do. And maybe he's thinking about, hey, let's get yards after the catch instead of let's just make sure we get the ball into our hands first of all. I don't know any of that. Maybe I'm reaching with some of the guesswork there. But listen, I do think there were some different things in play. And while I don't think Penn State passed all of the tests, the bottom line is I got out of there with a win. I think they're still in good shape in terms of the overall season. And you know, it was pointed out, I was reading the statecollege.com had a article, I think it was Ben Jones coming out of the game talking about it's, I think it was at that point, 34 days till Michigan and whatever it is, 50-some to Ohio State. So they have over a month. I mean, and not saying you can overlook anybody, but let's face it, this season in the minds of most of us is going to be measured by two games. And they do have some time to get some things figured out here and try to get on the right page before the two biggest tests of the season for sure.
And also, Jeff, we all see things from this prism of the blue and white, Penn State only. The fact that this was a road game meant I spent way too many hours on Saturday flipping game to game. But the advantage to that was it's not automatic that you're going to play a great, your A game every time. Ask Florida State, ask Georgia, ask Alabama. And also remember Colorado, the new darlings of all this. They were what, about a 24-point favorite over Colorado State. I know, exciting game and all that, but that wasn't supposed to be close, okay? Now, maybe it's a mistake to lump Colorado in with those other teams I mentioned, but it's just to say this path for a college football team, it's not always a straight line.
Correct. And I think that that is one of the things I you know, was reading some of the social media posts and stuff, and it's like, oh, elite teams don't have off days. They come ready to play. It's like, oh, no, that's actually not true. Even when Alabama was on a roll, right? And obviously, I don't think this year's team, at least at this point, is not looking like one of Nick Saban's finer pieces of work. But even in those years, right, we talked about it. They had those games that they either struggled and barely won against lesser competition, or yes, they lost some games to teams that they weren't supposed to. You go to Ohio State, who, you know, is the standard bearer in the Big Ten, and there's been several years where they've stubbed their toe against Purdue or somebody else. So the idea that no, the elite teams always show up and throttle who they're supposed to throttle just isn't true. And the other part of it is, at the end of the day, Jim, I'm sure in the film room they are going to be very critical, and there is a ton to work on, and we've touched on a couple of things here, and we'll get into more of it. At the end of the day, they were expected to win by 14.5 points. They covered the spread again, so not only are they 3-0, which is the most important thing to the program, but they're 3-0 against the spread. I mean, they're doing what they're supposed to do. Now, watching the game, did it look like they were that much better than Illinois? No. But the other thing I will caution is I still don't know. We're three games in. I want to see how this Illinois team performs over the course of the season. I think Brett Bielema is a heck of a football coach, and I'm not sure that Illinois is quite as bad as some, including me, may have believed after the loss to Kansas and the way they kind of got pushed around in the first half against Kansas, because they did rebound and played a much better second half against Kansas. I do think the Toledo team that they eked a win out against is probably the class of the MAC. And you might want to talk to teams like Iowa State about how good some of the MAC teams are. Let's wait and see how the season plays out. This 30-13 win over Illinois at the end of the season might not look like nearly as bad as what I think some are thinking it is right now. Just as I think some of the wins, you know, like Colorado beating TCU, that at the end of the year, that might not look like quite the win that it felt like in the moment. You just got to see how the season plays out in regards to a bunch of these teams right now.
Well, Jeff, you mentioned that the most important thing is that they're 3-0 with their official record, but that against the spread thing is important to some people, okay? There are some degenerates out there who find that to be an important factor.
I have actually met a couple of those degenerates, so I know of whom you speak.
we'll leave it at that. Now, I do want to get back to some of the mistakes that were made by Penn State and what the cost was of those, what the price they had to pay. But let's talk about the other side of the ball, Illinois, and what they did. And Jeff, I want to get your take, because it just felt to me like defensively, Illinois was one step ahead of Penn State's offensive coaching staff.
Yeah, I do think that they were really well prepared. I think that this is the other component, and I don't know this, but it felt like Penn State stayed pretty vanilla in terms of its overall offense. Now, I think as the game went along, you saw some stops being pulled out, and I think they felt like they just needed to change some things up, you know, and the Trey Potts pass being probably the primary example of that. But I think by and large, my gut feeling, and I could be completely wrong in this, but I just feel like Penn State is saving some things in the arsenal for what they can do till they feel like they need it. And, you know, maybe you start arguing that they need it now. If you have it in the arsenal, let's start seeing it. But, you know, it was another day where the big plays were tough to come by. It's hard to believe that Nicholas Singleton is not going to explode for some big 70-yard type or more touchdown runs over the course of the season. And with Drew Aller and his arm, again, it's hard to believe that kind of the same thing with the passing game. You won't see those types of plays over the course of the season. But listen, we talked going in. Illinois does have some really good individual players, and I think they did a great job of putting those players in position to make plays, and they did. And I think it was a really inspired effort by Illinois. And you can obviously argue from the Penn State perspective, it was a pretty uninspired offensive performance. But I do think, you know, it's the old maybe I listened to Joe Paterno for too many years, but I do think sometimes you have to tip your cap and say, hey, the opponent did a really good job preparing and being ready for us. And, you know, I do think Illinois deserves a lot of credit. Three turnovers and, you know, and the first two holding Penn State to field goals and then not giving up anything. That was significant. To me, disappointing, obviously, from the Penn State side. But I do think, again, you have to give Illinois some credit. And I am curious to see in what feels like a really wide open West this year, how Illinois fares. Because I'm not sure before it's all said and done, if they can get their quarterback to start making some better decisions, that they aren't a team that could contend in the West division this season.
And by wide open, I think the word you were searching for was mediocre, Jeff.
At best.
Yeah, that's part of it. And there are some real players on that team, starting with that Johnny Newton. Boy, I read a little bit about him as being considered the number one defensive tackle in the country, going to be the highest drafted one. He showed it. He really showed it on Saturday. That is it, though, for quarter one. When we hit quarter two, Jeff, I want to talk to you about some of the mistakes that Penn State made on the offensive side of the ball.
Hey, guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
And welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number two. He's Jeff. I'm Jim. We're talking Penn State, Illinois. Penn State, first game on the road, came back with a 30-13 win. And it was a mixed bag, Jeff, a lot going on. I wanted to get back to the offensive side of the ball, and it just seemed like every mistake Penn State made cost them. And when you watch when I watch the game for the first live, there's only so much you take from those mistakes because you don't know if a drop pass on second down is followed up by a first down completion on third down, and it's pretty much not that important. However, seemed like every time Penn State made a mistake, and we mentioned Malik McClain, and I feel like I'm beating up on him a bit, but in the first half, first series, he drops a first down pass. Guess what? Third down incompletion, you turn the ball over. You have to kick. Second half, he drops a pass. It's the same thing. But even the other mistakes that were made were costly. When now the personal fouls that I call were called, there were three of them. I think the officials should not have called any of them. But agreed. On Lambert Smith, you know, you had like, I think a third and two became a third and 17 that doesn't get converted. I just gave you three instances where Penn State made brutal mistakes and you end up losing possession. And I'll throw one more in for you. We meant Drew Aller maybe didn't have his best day, but one of the best passes he threw was when Penn State was inside the five, and he just dropped that little pass into Catron Allen's hands. You could not have done that any better, right through the hands. Of course, it wasn't caught, and you score, you kick a field goal. It costs you 4 points. So, you know, I just named four mistakes that cost you three possessions and 4 points. That's a heavy price to pay for those mistakes, Jeff.
No question. And we talk all the time, Jim, about football being the ultimate team game. And you need 11 guys doing the right thing to make it work. And that's not to say that there aren't plays that are successful where one or two guys aren't doing it. But you get the point. It just takes one person with a breakdown. And it just seemed like there were different people in different places. I mean, nobody's going to point the finger at Catron Allen and say, boy, that guy's just not carrying his load this season, right? I mean, the guy's been unbelievable. But, yeah, when Drew Aller delivers the perfect pass in the perfect spot, man, you need to make the play, right? And Malik McClain, a chance to get a first down, you need to bring that ball in. And Drew Aller, when the receiver's open, you can't be overthrowing him there. So, you know, it's not that the blame goes to any one guy. I do think there was plenty of blame to share. And I don't think it was a situation where anybody had just a disastrous game or, hey, their head wasn't in it, right? I mean, these were all mistakes that I think were just – I don't think it was anybody not giving full effort or anybody not playing too casually or anything like that. I think it was just frustrating, I think, for the team as well, because it was, again, guys that you've seen perform well all season long and even throughout most of the game on Saturday. Drew Aller, Catron Allen, Sal Warmley, across the board, you just had, oh man, a play here. Boy, you'd like that back. Oh, another play there. Well, that was another guy. Man, I wish he had that one back. And it was just that type of a day. And as you said, it was a day where it just seemed they couldn't get out of their own way sometimes between a drop ball or an errant pass or a missed block, then compounded by a penalty from, again, different individuals in different spots. And it just was one of those days where, you know, hopefully you learn from. We talked at the beginning of the season, Jim, you just know with every team, there's going to be a game or two where you're just not on for whatever reason. It's not that you're overlooking anybody. It's not that the other team is great. It's just you're off. And in a conference like the Big Ten, when you're off, you're in danger. And the fact that Penn State, I think, had an off day in a lot of different ways and got out of there with a 30-13 win and in pretty good shape health-wise, as far as we know, I think you take that, you move on, you hope the team learns from it, and you don't have another day where things go quite as wrong as they seemed to or felt like they did on Saturday.
And James Franklin, it was interesting in his post game, he talked about we'll have plenty to watch on tape. And it's interesting. I always watch the game again a second time. And, you know, you have the perspective of how the game ends. You know the ending of the story. So you watch the game a little bit differently. Instead of just saying, oh, that was a missed pass, you now say, what was the price that was paid for it? The sack, okay, what caused the sack? There was also, in addition, and you alluded to it, I mentioned the personal foul penalty, but there was also, I think it was Caden Wallace who jumped on a third and one that became a third and six. And once more, if you convert the third and six, nobody cares, but you didn't. So that's now at least four possessions that were ended from either a penalty or a drop pass. But then, you know, Drew Aller wasn't clear all day either. You mentioned it. Theo Johnson open in the end zone. And it wasn't necessarily an easy pass, but it's one that he's been making the first two games.
Yep.
Not to mention missing Keandre Lambert-Smith, who broke free deep, and he didn't see him. So let's talk about Drew Aller and the kind of game that he had, Jeff. Is this just a young guy with his first start on the road is just going to have one of those games?
Right now, that's what I'm thinking. And obviously, if you're a Penn State fan, that's what you're hoping. I don't think we truly know the answer to that until we get a little further into the season and you see him a couple more times on the road and with more pressure. I mean, listen, I think I was going to get good pressure on him too. And let's see, you know, how much he learns from the experience at Illinois and how much the offense as a whole learns and how much better they look. Or, you know, if not, then yeah, I think you start getting concerned. I don't think you're hitting the panic button if you get out of the Iowa game Saturday night with a win. But yeah, if you start to see some things, you know, if Penn State has another 7 penalties Saturday night, this starts to become a real concern about how this team is going to be able to adjust moving forward in the season. So, you know, there are things that I think are worth watching right now. You know, after the Iowa game, you're a third of the way into the regular season. So I think you can at least start to establish, okay, yep, these are real areas of concern. These are areas of strength, and then some things in between. You know, for me, offensively, two games, they were really good catching the ball. Two games, Drew Aller was really accurate. I thought Aller was accurate most of the game Saturday, but there were, you know, two or three that, man, you really like to have back. And I think his judgment's been pretty good this season. But Saturday, two or three where you're like, oh, man, how are you not seeing that? So let's see. To me, it's kind of now let's just wait and see how the entire team adjusts. And that starts with James Franklin and Mike Yurcich and what you know they're doing to put these guys in position to have success. You know, I will say the tight ends, I do think have been, if you're looking for, to me, Warren has been maybe the most consistent player. I mean, he made a terrific catch in traffic on Saturday. I think he is a guy that has been remarkably consistent, and at least to my recollection, and maybe I'm forgetting something here, but I don't think he's been called for a penalty this season. And I think at least when I've been watching him, man, he seems to be on target with his blocks and catches. And so I do think the tight ends, both of them, are going to be a key component moving forward. But I think just across the board, you've just got to get more consistent play. Again, I don't think there was anything there where you're like, oh my gosh, this guy just had a miserable game. The offensive tackle or the guard or the wide receiver, they just got to get him out of there. It was just a couple of plays at virtually all of those spots are like, ah, man. But when you have every player off for a couple of different plays throughout the course of the game, right, it adds up quickly when you only have, you know, what is it these days? It's it used to always be 70 to 75. It's probably more 60 to 65 plays now that you have in a game. And if you have, you know, significant errors on almost half of them, that's going to make it hard to get your offense going.
The offensive line was the area that was supposed to be so improved. This was not a game where they wrapped themselves in glory, and then that affects everything. It affects the running game. It affects the passing game. To me, Illinois' defensive line was better than Penn State's offensive line on Saturday.
It was. And at the start of the season, I would have said, I think this is probably going to be a pretty even matchup, Penn State's O-line against Illinois' D-line. I thought Illinois' D-line was going to be really good. And then I watched the first half of that Kansas-Illinois game, and I'm watching Penn State run up and down the field, albeit against Delaware and to a large degree even against West Virginia. And it's like, okay, you know, Penn State has a distinct edge there. That Illinois defense that played Saturday afternoon is more along the lines of what I thought Illinois was going to be all season long. And so, again, I'm really curious to watch and see how Illinois fares here in the Big Ten the rest of the season. And conversely, I'm not really curious to see how Penn State's offensive line fares, because obviously, I mean, Iowa's got a solid defensive line. And, you know, as we consistently talk about, you know, that Michigan and Ohio State or Ohio State and then Michigan are coming. And, you know, those lines are going to be watching what happened in this Illinois game and making notes, and Penn State's going to have to make some adjustments. I'm not well versed enough, Jim, to know for sure whether or not this was a situation where Illinois was just physically outmatching Penn State at the line, or whether there were just some missed assignments. There are two specific cases where I think it was just, and they were both Newton. And listen, getting overpowered by Newton is not exactly, you know, a call for a walk of shame. This guy's going to make a lot of offensive linemen, a lot of really good offensive linemen, look not so good. But across the board, again, I just don't know if it was missed assignments or, yep, Penn State just was getting manhandled across the board. It didn't feel like that. Again, I think Newton is just a freak of nature, and that one you just kind of have to eat and move on.
All right, Jeff, that is it for quarter number two. Next segment, I promise we'll get to the more positive side of the game. We'll get to that Penn State defense after this.
Hey guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
And welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. He's Jeff Byers. I'm Jim Galante. We are talking about Penn State, Illinois. Last weekend, this coming weekend, it's Penn State, Iowa. And Jeff, by the way, a lot of our audience is from out of town. By out of town, I mean not in State College, from all over. Converge into State College. I just want you to give them a heads up. If you're in for the weekend, there's some place to go for your local Penn State and other local sports, isn't there?
There is, and we were having a lot of fun with it. It's a new sports talk station in the State College area. It's Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. And if you are coming in Friday, 3 to 5 is when Keystone Kickoff Show airs on our local station. And there's also just I love the Fox Sports lineup, the national guys. It is not the formulaic sports talk that you've come to expect on a lot of the national shows. They really just have fun. It's a pretty free-flowing exchange across the board with their various shows, and I think it's just a fun listen if you're in the State College area or just coming in to visit. Also, Friday nights, we do what we call the Center County Red Zone, and we'll have updates of scores of games all across the state during that. So no matter where you're from, you may want to tune in just to find out how your local high schools are doing. But we really focus on the five Center County high school teams. And rather than have play-by-play of one high school, we just bounce around from game to game. We have reporters at each of the Center County schools. There's five of them. And we have a studio host, and this Friday it'll be me. Mark Snyder and I have been doing alternating the hosting role, and it's really a lot of fun. We enjoy the games, enjoy the action, but we get sidetracked with some fun conversation with that as well. And on Saturday, obviously, people are in for the Penn State game, but you're wanting to know what's going on across the country, and we'll have other games and the Fox Sports coverage of college football, which, again, I think has been absolutely terrific. So, yeah, if you're in the State College area for any period of time, Sports Radio 98.7 the Fox is, I would suggest, worth your while.
And I just want to mention too, I know a lot of our listeners listen through the podcast or through the app, I should say. On the app now, we have a button for Fox 98.7 in State College streaming. So if you want to get that taste of State College again, no matter where you are, you can get it on our app. If you don't have the app, Keystone Sports, you get all of our podcasts, some of the podcasts from our friends, and you could get 98.7 streaming. Jeff, while I'm going off topic, I want to keep going off topic just for a couple minutes. And, you know, I know we're all concerned about football, but there's some other sports at Penn State, and I understand over the weekend some of those Penn State wrestlers had quite a performance.
Yeah, and I guess it would be appropriate as it's Penn State Iowa week, right? If we're going to talk wrestling, Penn State Iowa week is when you do that, right? That's there's certainly been some great football games. Boy, that rivalry in the sport of wrestling has been pretty special too. But yeah, hats off to Zane Rutherford, who won his first world championship over the weekend, beat an Iranian in the finals, and really just put together a sensational tournament. Watched it from start to finish, and Rutherford just was on point and really at the top of his game. And I think it bodes well for his potential at the Olympic Games next year. And that's obviously, this is kind of the tune-up. This year's World Championships is looked at as the tune-up to the Olympic year of 2024. So congratulations to Zane Rutherford winning his first World Championship. And then David Taylor capturing his fourth world title. The battle that he has with Yazdani is maybe the greatest rivalry right now in the sport of wrestling. You know, think Michigan, Ohio State football. it is really special stuff. And David Taylor not only beat him in the finals, he pinned him with just a few seconds left. David was going to win the match. I think it was 9-3 anyway, but he got the pin, and it was the second pin of the tournament for Taylor, who just, again, is, I think, arguably right now, pound for pound, the best wrestler in the world. And certainly he is riding a wave of momentum into the World Championships next year. So pretty special stuff to have two guys on the same day win a title. And Nick Lee, as we're recording this, you know, he has the potential to be going for gold as well. He starts his tournament Monday, and then the gold medal matches for his weight will be or the gold medal match will be on Tuesday. So you know, chance that Penn State could end up with three medalists, or a chance at even three gold as we're recording this.
Very special, Jeff, very special. And we're just lucky to have Jeff Byers here, someone who knows what's going on with wrestling. Jeff, as promised, we were going to talk about the other side of the ball, Penn State's defense, which was pretty special. And sometimes you see a game with these kind of turnovers and you say, well, just really fortunate you got the turnovers. No, I look at this one as Penn State's defense forced those turnovers. They made them happen, Jeff.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. And, you know, I'm not going to say this was a stellar day for Illinois at quarterback. But, yeah, I think Penn State did a great job getting pressure. And, you know, how many times over the years, Jim, have we said, oh, man, I would be interception, or boy, that was close. That was, I mean, these guys, when they had the opportunity, they cashed in. We're talking about the receivers on the offense for Penn State, you know, letting some opportunities drop by. The defense did not let that happen. And I thought, you know, obviously it was a big, big difference maker in the game on Saturday. And we had talked going in, you know, that was a concern, not necessarily a worry, but a bit of a concern after two games. They hadn't had a lot in the takeaway department. Other than the big pick six by Don DeLuca, who delivered again on Saturday, and he's becoming a big play Dom on the defense. But it was nice to see the defensive backs getting as involved as they were and make the plays that I think we thought that they could. I mean, we've been talking about those secondary from the end of last season leading into this season as being a real strength and maybe one of the better units in the country. And boy, they sure looked like that on Saturday. But again, we talk about it being a team game, and those plays aren't happening without some really good work up front as well. And I just thought, yeah, the defense was very opportunistic and created some really good situations for itself.
And on those turnovers, Jeff, just off the top of my head, you mentioned it, Dom DeLuca, the back, he didn't drop the ball. It was knocked out. DeLuca made the hit that created that turnover. The other one I want to highlight is Daquan Hardy. Remember the slot cornerback? Well, he was on the outside. And the fact is, Jeff, it wasn't just about the interception, which was very well done. It was the coverage, start to finish. This was man-to-man, one-on-one, no help from anywhere. Why are you challenging Daquan Hardy, Jeff?
The problem is, who are you going to challenge in that secondary? I mean, that really is, I think, a dilemma for offenses right now. And, yeah, I just think that this we saw Saturday why I think this defense has a chance to be really special. This is a group that can make plays like that, I think, in key spots throughout the course of the season. And I think sometimes you just need kind of that breakthrough game, which that certainly was on Saturday, to maybe take you to another level. And I'm really excited to see what this team and this unit, this defensive unit, can do both against Iowa here Saturday night, but then looking ahead to the rest of the season, because it feels like now, you know, that that talent and the confidence are kind of coming together. And when you get that combination of top elite athleticism and then, you know, real confidence that is bred from success, again, that can be a really, really difficult combination to beat.
The other turnover I wanted to highlight was Abdul Carter's interception, because he started at the line of scrimmage. And if you're a quarterback and you see Abdul Carter near the line of scrimmage,
yep,
you're very, very, very conscious of that. And I believe they highlighted that during the game. Joel Klatt talked about that and how Abdul Carter then got into the passing lane, and I don't think the quarterback ever even saw him. And, you know, I'm giving Manny Diaz credit for that interception. But the other part of it that I didn't notice until I watched the replay was the guy putting pressure on the quarterback was Johnny Dixon, a cornerback.
Yeah.
So what you had, Jeff, was the cornerback pressuring the quarterback and the linebacker back in coverage making the interception. Credit Manny Diaz, right?
No doubt. And I think that is one of the things, and I think we talked about this in that week leading up to the West Virginia game, about one of the things I was excited to see was all of the different ways that this team can use its talent on the defensive side of the ball and all of the different schemes that they could possibly come up with. And, you know, I don't know that they need a ton in terms of schemes. I mean, I think that this defense is good enough that you can play pretty straightforward and be pretty good. But I mean, they are going to be able to bring pressure from any of the three units, the line, the linebackers, or the secondary. And I think with the athleticism they have at linebacker, you can drop those guys into coverage in spots and feel pretty good. And actually, even with the defensive ends, I think, you know, there are times where you can give a completely different look and drop those guys into coverage as well. And certainly, you know, you can bring heat from the secondary as well as the linebacking core and the defensive line. And I just think that versatility of what this team can bring defensively is has the potential to be a real difference maker when we get to those the key matchups against the Ohio States and Michigans later in the season.
All right, very good, Jeff. That has to be it for quarter number three, but we are not done yet. We have quarter four yet to go. And, Jeff, we're going to hit special teams. How about that?
Yeah. Love it.
We'll be right back after this.
Hey, guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
And welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim. He's Jeff. This is quarter number four of our show. And Jeff, I promised we'd get to the special teams, but before we do, you mentioned, I thought, something very important. You beat me to the punch about the defensive ends even dropping into coverage. There's a play. Chop Robinson, he looked really good in coverage. Now, he may not feel good about not making that interception, but he looked so athletic. He did not look like a defensive lineman in coverage, did he?
No, and he and Adisa Isaac are just special players. And again, the versatility of what these guys can do, the different things that I think Manny Diaz can dial up because of that. And listen, you know, in the case of a guy like Chop Robinson, you're talking about somebody who has a lot of experience now and can bring, you know, I think a real sixth sense to the position and to the defense as a whole. And I think, again, as these guys get more comfortable with some of the younger players, Rojas is another one that I thought played his best game of the season and really showed up in some key spots. And I think, again, it's just a matter of getting some more reps and getting comfortable for some of these younger guys. But with the veteran leadership that these guys have, again, sometimes I think they're just going to be able to feel things or see things. And it's like, I know I'm supposed to rush here, but I can feel this coming. I'm just going to call it off, or vice versa. And I think when you have that type of feel on the defense and you have the trust that I think these guys have in Manny Diaz and that Manny Diaz has in them, that's when you have the chance to do some really special things. And I do think this defense has a chance to be really special by the end of the year. That being said, I will say that the one concern still is that middle of the defense and against good offensive lines, you know, how is it going to hold up? And I think that remains a concern. And until we get to the Ohio State and Michigan games, again, we may have indications, and I thought we had some indications for as good as the defense overall looked. I think that the middle of that defense against a good run game is still a real concern for this team.
And we haven't really seen that yet, but just in highlighting a couple other guys, I'll mention right there at defensive tackle, Kaziah Izzard came back in this game also and played a role.
And it was nice to see him back out there, I will say, from Penn State's perspective. And again, I do think they have depth there, and I think they're good. I don't know. I hate to always go back to James Franklin's, you know, we got to be elite. But I just don't know that group, it feels like this defense is elite at defensive end, at linebacker, and in the secondary across the board. At defensive tackle, it feels to me right now like it's pretty good. Whether it can be great or elite, I think is still an open question, at least for me.
Let's highlight a couple other players, Jeff. Did Trey Potts earn his stripes? Did he become a Nittany Lion this weekend?
I think he did. It had to feel good for him, right? I mean, you could just see it in the way he carried himself. And I think James Franklin was it, I think it was in this last week's press conference. It was in one of the last couple that he talked about Potts and just the progress he's made and his comfort level now within the system and what they're trying to do and what he can bring to the table. And I think having that that moment and you know, and really these last couple of games now, I think he's had a chance to kind of show that, yeah, he's a pretty doggone good running back in his own right. And again, we keep talking about the depth on this team, but yeah, when a guy like Potts is your third option, and he can perform the way he did. And listen, I don't know. Have they opened up the competition between Aller and Potts yet for the starting gig against Iowa? Because I mean, that was a pretty decent throw. Just throwing it out there.
Well, all I'm saying is Drew Aller's quarterback rating was a 66. Trey Potts was a 100. You get for one attempt, one completion, 11 yards, and a touchdown, Jeff. So if you extrapolate that over a full game.
I mean, listen, I'm not saying that Potts should just be handed the job, but, I mean, there's got to be competition now, right?
That's what this team prides itself on during the week. We heard that about the kickers.
Yes, indeed.
Here's one other thing to mention, Jeff, and I don't know if it's one of those things where was it the West Virginia game when they brought in their second team quarterback along with the first team quarterback and your antenna has to go up. Now, I'm not sure that happens yet with Trey Potts getting on the field, but did you notice he was on the field prior to that play? And yeah. I don't know if they knew they were going to call that a couple plays ahead of time and wanted to get him into the game so it wasn't an obvious substitution and a thought by the defense. I don't know. I just know that I noticed him in the game and it made me wonder, was one of the other running backs nicked up? And that was the issue.
Yeah, that could be. I don't know that they just haven't decided that, listen, we need to get him involved a little bit too, both to so that he has that feel for the game if one of those guys goes down. But also I think because they feel like he's earning it. Again, I think they genuinely do. I mean, I'm obviously being facetious about the competition for the starting quarterback, but I really do think they've got a lot of guys on the depth chart that are truly pushing. And, you know, in some of these cases, and certainly at running back, we're talking about, you know, All-American caliber, first team guys, first and second team guys, but I think they genuinely have at a lot of these positions, you know, 2, 3, 4 deep that are doing everything they can to garner themselves some more, some playing time or more playing time and make sure that the starters or even the backups aren't feeling too comfortable about where they're at with their status. And again, that's what you have to have if you are going to be a playoff contending team.
As promised, we're going to hit special teams. Do we have a field goal kicker, Jeff?
Yeah, I think we do. I will say on one of the earlier kicks, and I'm forgetting, it must have been the 45-yarder, I guess. I mean, it wouldn't make sense that the I remember on one of the kicks, I said to myself, I'm like, oh, man, that just seemed a little low. And it was good. I mean, it was no problems. But I was not forecasting the block. It just was like the thought that went through my head. And then obviously they had the one block. That being said, yeah, I think Falcons is your guy moving forward. He looks the part. He looks comfortable there. And he has been very consistent. I mean, he really has. The block is the only miss he's had in a game this season. So, yeah, you've clearly got a good field goal kicker. I don't know that you have, a guy that's going to win the game on a 61-yarder for you as time expires, but I think they're in pretty good shape there nonetheless.
I like the Missouri reference there, Jeff. But and he did hit a 45-yarder. So
yeah,
and he seemed to do it rather comfortably.
No doubt. No, I think he just looks good there. I mean, and all parts of that seem to be working. I mean, the snaps, the holds, and the kicks, and at least as of right now through three games, I think. Speaking for myself, anyway, I feel very good about the field goal situation now.
The other part of the special teams, we know kicking off Osu has been doing a good job, but Caden Saunders handling punts, and he had one nice return. But for me, Jeff, it's just, am I comfortable with this guy back there that he's going to catch the ball? Boy, does he look confident back there.
He does. And I'm telling you, Jim, it is one of those things we talk about hitting yardage sometimes. Coming up and making the fair catch when it is not an easy fair catch and coming up through traffic and making that, that can save you, 15, 20 yards of field position. And when we get to these games that we're talking about later in the season where, it's going to be, 7 points or less you expect in terms of the difference, those yards can be huge. I've been very impressed with his decision making, and I think at some point he's going to get some big plays, more big plays with the punt return game. I kind of feel about him the way I do with Nicholas Singleton. I just feel like at some point there's going to be, I don't know if he's going to have a punt return for a touchdown, but I feel like you're going to get some big yards, some big returns along the way. But I'm with you. I just think very importantly is take the yards that are at least there given to you by making sure you catch the ball. And I feel really good about the way he has done that through, again, the first quarter of the season here.
And he did get some play at wide receiver and made a couple catches. So it appears he is becoming part of the game plan. All right, Jeff, 1 minute left. This is your chance. One final thought on the game.
I am not overly concerned still. I know we were exchanging texts with a couple of different friend groups that I'm in and, various degrees of concern and disappointment and frustration. Especially coming out of the first half. At the end of the day, I think that is, I guess I'm hoping that's as bad of a day in terms of just things being off kilter and out of sync. And let's face it, it was, again, the first road game of the season for Drew Aller and this team. At the end of the day, you feel like they struggled and didn't get a lot of things that they wanted to get done properly, and you walked away with a 30-13 win. I think that's a pretty good indication that this team is capable of doing some really good things down the road. I think this will be a big week with Iowa in the whiteout game to try to look like, yep, this is a team that belongs on that list of playoff contenders. I do think this game is important in that regard coming up.
Very good, Jeff. That is it for our show. And thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Hey, guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are.